that is pulling out all the stops for Royal Ascot. That's right, it's money back as a free bet on all losers if the starting prize favourite wins on one race each day of the festival. Check out the app for today's race. Max free bet £10. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Hello, one and all, and we have made it to the preview of the final day of Royal Ascot 2018. A sort of new look final day with a bit of jiggery pokery in terms of the races taking place, but a very familiar panel to discuss the races. From the Racing Post, Stuart Riley and Tony O'Hare, and from Paddy Power, Paul Binfield, joining myself, Lee Muttershead. And the day starts, as it normally does on this Saturday, with the Chesham Stakes, one of two juvenile listed races this year. Natalie's Joy heads the betting for Mark Johnson and Joe Fanning, a very impressive winner at Goodwood last time. Binners, what price have the Paddy Power compilers put Natalie's Joy in at?
15-8, Lee, and then you can have 5-1 Beyond Reason, 7 Cardini, 8 on a session, and it's 9-1 bar.
Okay, Stuart, Natalie's Joy made a really good impression at Goodwood. I was there that day, and she's streak clear. I think some thought she might head up for the Albany Stakes. She's come here instead, 7 furlongs. How good do you think she is?
I think she's very good. I think she's definitely the one to beat, and she makes the puzzle a lot easier if you side with her. If you decide to side against her, it becomes a real head scratcher. The one that's really caught my eye is Cardini, for no reason other than Aidan O'Brien's last four runners in this. Three of them have gone on to be Group 1 horses. The only one that hasn't is September, who has gone super close. She's up to that standard, and you'd like to think she'd probably win one this year if she gets out on track. So it's a case of Aidan O'Brien seems to run every year a horse he thinks is a proper Group 1 horse. It turns out to be a proper Group 1 horse, and if this is a proper Group 1 horse, then 7-1 is a pretty decent price. However, the form is not there. So be interesting to see what Tony thinks.
Well, I'll tell you what, it'd be very interesting to see what Tony Hare thinks. As Stu says, Tony, Cardini's come here with form figures of 8-5. That's pretty much as bad as anything in the race. What's the inside word on Cardini?
Well, there was plenty of chat about him before his first run. Aidan was saying that he was a really nice colt. He'd been doing things right at home, but he could be very green. He was. There wasn't that much improvement on his second start, so it's very hard to make a case for him on form, but it'll be very interesting to see if the 7-1 disappears and the boys decide he's worth an interest. He needs to improve, but his record in the race would make you respect the horse all the same.
Yeah, he's an interesting horse, isn't he, Paul? The fact that Ballydoll are running in this race with those form figures against him. Would you envisage a plunge on Cardini?
Yeah, there might be, actually, Lee. Unbelievably, and I'll prove to you that I'm not lying. I've gone for Cardini as well, not in liaison with these two.
Can you just show the paper to camera?
Look, Cardini. Look at that extensive research that goes into these interviews for our viewers.
Is your Sainsbury shopping list on there as well?
Yeah, Sainsbury's is on this side. But Cardini, very interesting, up to 7 furlongs. My only reason for going for it really was Aidan did a long interview at Nace one day when I was over there talking about a lot of horses, and he mentioned the Chesham Stakes for a certain horse, and I just thought it was interesting that he mentioned the race. So
he mentioned the race for Cardini at that stage?
No, I don't know if it was that horse. I think it was a different one, actually.
But does that not slightly negate the importance of...
Well, just the fact that he mentioned the Chesham and he didn't mention any other two-year-old races that day, it is... That's my only reason, really.
And you go over there quite a lot. Have you heard vibes about Cardini?
I haven't, to be honest with you, Lee. No.
Okay.
That statistic from Stuart is why people watch these podcasts. It's just amazing.
Well, don't do down your own efforts. I think you become a cult hero. You are one of the reasons why these podcasts are soaring up the rating scales.
No, I have little doubt in that, Lee.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, exactly. The second race on day two is the Hardwick Stakes, in which Crystal Ocean is going to start a very short price favourite to win this race for Sir Michael Stack, who wins it most years. Binners, what price is he?
Well, we make Crystal Ocean 4-7, so we think he's going to win. 5-1 Barsanti, 11-2 Idaho, 10 Cliffs of Mohair, and it's 25 Red Verdon. But we are doing one of our little money back specials.
Oh, go on, what is it?
Money back for punters as a free bet if Crystal Ocean wins the race.
And £10 maximum limit.
£10 maximum limit, but that looks extremely generous when you've got a 4-7 odds on favourite.
Yep, indeed. Tony, what's really interesting about this one is it's pretty rare these days that Ryan Moore gets off or is allowed to get off a Ballydoll horse to ride for his former main employer, Sir Michael Stout. How significant is that in this case with Crystal Ocean?
I think it's very significant, yeah. I mean, Idaho is a horse that's very hard to follow or fathom. I mean, he can be very good, but he was trounced in the Coronation Cup, having won at Chester. He won this race last year. Again, no, he'd be there or thereabouts, but he's not a horse I have an awful lot of faith in. And Cliftonmore turning out again so quickly after running in the Group 1 earlier in the week, over a mile and a quarter. I mean, he was second in the Derby, but, you know, he's a maybe horse or a nearly horse. He's not. I'd be surprised if he's up to it.
Okay. Stu, you often compile the big race tactics dossier in the Racing Post. You look at how a race will pan out potentially. If you're a jockey riding against Crystal Ocean, or if you're riding more on Crystal Ocean, how does this race go?
I think the fact that it's Ryan Moore on Crystal Ocean makes this tactically even more of an interesting race, because the Ballydoll, they're not going to gang up on him, are they? He is one of their own. They aren't going to ride the race to really... The problem with Crystal Ocean as a horse in this race is he's got the tactical speed. The last time he won by 6 lengths, they went an absolute crawl. He's got the stamina for further, and if they go a real gallop, they're not going to expose him that way either. The issue that they've got is there's an awful lot of stayers in this race. I think if you try and make it a stamina test, which the majority of them are going to want, you just set it up for him. So the flip side then comes, well, do you go, right, Ryan, you make it. You make the running, you set the pace, or we're going to go an absolute crawl, in which case you may get done for a turn of foot, something may be able to get first run on you. If that is the case, and that is the way it transforms, then Cliffs of Moa does become interesting, because most of his racing has been over shorter. He does have a turn of foot, so if they go a real crawl, it brings Cliffs of Moa into it. But tactics wise Crystal Ocean is fairly bomb proof, because they go slow, he wins, they go quick, he wins, really.
Tony, would you agree with Stuart's point that because Ryan is one of their own, the Ballydoll duo riding Idaho and Cliffs of Moa will be maybe kinder to him than they might be to somebody else?
I wouldn't agree with that. I'd say they'll be doing their own thing, regardless of who's riding Crystal Ocean. I think you're clutching at straws if you think that's going to happen.
I'm not. I'm clutching at no straws, because this is a plug for whoever does the Monday column in the Racing Post. But they tipped Crystal Ocean at 5-2 for this race last month. That's quite inspired tipping, isn't it, Tony?
It really is. Yeah, you can't believe the price he is now.
No, can't believe it. Binners, would you take Stu's generous approach? Or Tony's more perhaps realistic.
I thought Stuart made a very good point about the first race. I think in this race he's talking an absolute load of old rollocks, you know.
Well, I'm not sure we can say rollocks on the post.
You're not allowed to say rollocks, but these are professional sportsmen, and Aidan O'Brien's not going to come here and with Shamey and all that lot and say, oh, Ryan's on the favourite, let's let him win. They're not going to do that, are they?
No, no.
To be fair.
No. So you thought you got high intensity debate on Question Time. You actually get it on the postcast. And with that, we end part one.
Paddy's pulling out all the stops for Royal Ascot. That's right, it's money back as a free bet on all losers if the starting prize favourite wins on one race each day of the festival. Check out the app for today's race. Max free bet £10. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome back to Ascot as we look ahead to day 5 of the Royal Meeting. And for the first time, I think on the Saturday, certainly the first time for a long time, the Windsor Castle Stakes has been moved onto the card, in which Moonlight Romance, but I'm sure you've had a few Moonlight Romances, heads the betting at what price?
Well, I wish I had, Lee. 4-1 Moonlight Romance, 6 Queen of Bermuda, 7 Sabre, 8 Mutawatha, and Van Beethoven, 10-1 bar, and extreme generosity from Paddy, 5 places each way on a 2-year-old race, which is superb.
He really should be in the Samaritans. He's a lovely person.
He's lovely. He just keeps giving stuff away this week.
It's he's a giver.
He's a giver, yeah. Definitely.
It's a horribly, horribly hard race.
It is a horrible race.
It's a horrible race. Horribly hard race.
Horribly hard race, yeah.
You don't want to be rude about one of the Queen's races.
No, no, it's a great race.
Not that good.
Well, it's not bad. I think this. I'm going to go for Van Bait over, and I don't want to steal Tony's thunder. No doubt he'll tell people about it in a minute. But I think the Marble Hill Stakes at the Curragh might turn out to be one of the race of the season in Ireland at the moment. We'll know more after Fairyland runs, but I was surprised Van Beethoven got beaten last time. I think he's a really, really nice horse, and at 8-1, I think he's a price.
Race of the season, the Marble Hill, he says.
I'd say that would be a slight exaggeration.
But we've not the Galway Play, have we?
Yeah, we have, yeah. The Galway Play's coming up, yeah. I'd agree. I mean, we've fought four runners in the race, three of them from Ballydoyle and Don Carlos and Joseph O'Brien's. I think Van Beethoven would be the pick of the four of them. He's won a maiden, good run in the Marble Hill. I think it's interesting that he's coming back to 5 furlongs. He'd definitely be our best chance in the race.
Okay. Stu, you love your two-year-olds. How do you assess this one?
It's a head-scratcher, isn't it? It's a bit of a pin-stickers race, this, for me. It's just so hard. I was impressed by the Haggis Horse Queen of Bermuda on her last start. So, I mean, I'd side with her, but it's a very tentative selection.
And I know, you know, like yourself, Jared, David Backus, we've got some real good, strong juvenile judges. But a race like this, it's very hard to take a dogmatic view, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got the American Horse coming over as well. That, you know, we all take it on trust that Wesley Ward's going to turn up with a two-year-old that's bang capable of being right there. But you don't really know. You don't really know how all of the form sides up with each other. And yeah, you know, see one you like and take a chance.
I mean, that's pretty much the case. The big sprint of the meeting is the Diamond Jubilee Stakes. 6 furlongs, 4:20 on Saturday, and it's a real international renewal, which is what you want to see in this race, with Harry Angel, Merchant Navy, Redcoat Warrior, Bound for Nowhere, so many good horses from here, there and everywhere taking part. Paul Binfield, the prices are...
Well, we go 11-4 Harry Angel, Lee, and then it's 4 Merchant Navy, Redcoat Warrior, 8-1 the Tin Man, and it's 10-1 the rest.
Okay, let's start with Harry Angel then. He's a brilliant horse, was fantastic in the Haydock Spring Cup and the July Cup beforehand. He has 4 Ascot defeats to his name there. Clive Cox says that's just coincidence, he's not concerned by it. Stuart Riley, are you concerned by it?
No, not really. He's run some very good races here and he's only just been touched off. I mean, you take last year's Commonwealth Cup and he was bang there with was it Caravaggio and Blue Point, both of whom have more than franked the form since. And I think everyone who's watched that race and watched the horse develop since will accept it was a real growing up point for him, and he's been much more professional since then. I think we're dealing with a different version of Harry Angel now. He seems the finish article, and yeah, the track wouldn't be the concern for me.
Okay, what about then Redcoat Warrior, who has won at Ascot before, but over a mile and a quarter when trained by William Haggis and known as Redcoat back in 2014. Since then, he's done amazing things in Australia on the new market, their big Group 1 handicap back-to-back the last 2 years. Binnis, he's seriously good.
Yeah, I think he is seriously good, Lee. I'm going to go for him. I don't really have any clue whatsoever about Australian form, but he's been winning grade ones over there for fun. And there was a nice piece in the Racing Post the other day. Trainer said it was his best bet of the week, and I'll go along with him. I really like Australian sprinters when they come to Royal Ascot.
And when you say you got no clue about the Australian form, what you actually mean was you're not quite so much of an expert on the Australian form as you are the British form.
Yeah, that's right. I
just wanted to clarify. Yeah,
I do get a lot of emails and tweets about my expertise on the English form, but my Australian knowledge is
non-existent. Yeah. Do carry on watching, though. It is worth it, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Tony O'Hare, you've got Australian form and Irish form with Merchant Navy. Won the Coolmore, the big three-year-old sprint there at the Spring Carnival, and returned for Aidan O'Brien with the win at the Curragh last time.
Yeah, he won the Greenland Stakes, won it nicely, wasn't overly fancied on the day. The word beforehand was that he'd need the run because he hadn't been in Ballydoyle very long. I like the way he went about it. He was beaten by Redcap Warrior in Australia before they came over here, but they raced on opposite sides of the track, I think, and it was I wouldn't sort of read too much into that. I know they like him a lot. He's supposed to have come on well since his Curra win. I'd be a Harry Angel fan, but I think this fellow will put it up for him.
Okay, and Stu, we've not mentioned last year's winner, the Tin Man, Wesley's Horse, Bound for Nowhere, the Champions Day winner, Labrisa Breeze. There's some serious contenders deep in the race, aren't there?
Yeah, it's a bit like the King's Stand. Everyone got very caught up with the front two, and then Blue Point came through and won the race. There is that similar level of depth to this race. However, like that race, the top of the market is very strong, and it's kind of hard to get away from them. I've been a massive Harry Angel fan since he won at Newbury. He won the Mill Reef. I was there that day, and he was seriously impressive. And I think he's a serious horse. The only query, or the only sort of nagging doubt in the back of my mind, is a gentleman I know who works for Racing Victoria was here on the Tuesday, and he asked me for tips on the Tuesday. I gave him six terrible selections that all lost, so apologies for that. The only thing he said back to me in return was, make sure you back Redcap Warrior. He is seriously quick. And yeah, I mean, you need to be...
You're away, though. If you gave him six losers, he might have just been winding you up.
Well, he did tell me this before it turned out my six tips.
That's okay, then. Okay, fine.
It wasn't retribution.
Should say here as well that although Binnis is doing down his Australian knowledge, and Stu is saying he's tipped six losers so far, these really are heavyweights yes, indeed. So just sum up your tips, the Diamond Jubilee, Stuart.
Harry Angel.
And the Racing Victoria Mantis Redcap Warrior.
Yes.
Yeah. Tony Hare?
I think Harry Angel will win, and Merchant Navy will be second.
I think Harry Angel will win too. Paul Binfield?
Redcap Warrior, Lee.
And that ends part two.
Paddy's pulling out all the stops for Royal Ascot. That's right, it's money back as a free bet on all losers if the starting prize favourite wins on one race each day of the festival. Check out the app for today's race. Max free bet £10. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
We return with the final instalment of this week's Royal Ascot postcast. Joining myself, Lee Mottershead, we've got Stuart Riley, Tony O'Hare, and Paul Binfield, who has had a sartorial change for this final instalment. Binners, explain what you've done and why.
Well, I took my Royal Ascot pass off because I suddenly realised I've got my favourite tie on, and I just wanted people to see my favourite tie.
And for those who are listening to this, because not everyone watches, some people listen, radio is a wonderful thing.
It is.
Today programme, Desert Island Dis. Describe the tie to us.
I'd rather you did it, Lee. Your fashion sense is so much better than my own.
I would say it is courageous. The 5 o'clock race is the Wokingham Handicap, a huge cavalry charge down the track in which we have a pretty, by Wokingham standards, a red hot jolly. Paul Binfield, his name is?
Dreamfield, Lee, 7-2 favourite. Then it's a massive 12-1 after that. 14 Blue De Vega, Silent Echo, and it's 16-1 bar. And Paddy's going six places each way on this race, Lee.
Six.
A monster.
We discussed yesterday what a monster is, and a monster is six places. John Gosden is saying that this horse is far too short a price. But this week and in previous weeks, John Gosden has shown that although he is an outstanding trainer, he wouldn't necessarily make a great odds compiler. Do you think this horse is about the right price?
Well, you know, punters have come for him in the anti-post markets, and it's sheer support that's pushed him into this price. For me, 7-2 in a 28-runner race at Ascot over six furlongs isn't much value. But then if he hacks up by five lengths, he is value.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Is there one at a bigger price that you like?
Yeah, I quite like Grell for Richard Fahey, Lee. Caught a bit of a tartar in Catchy last time at Chester. Catchy was really good that day. But he goes into this race off a mark of 102, and he'd begun last season off 114. So the handicap has given him a chance, and hopefully he can prevail.
Okay, excellent. Tony Hare is saving himself for Galway, aren't you? You're going to leave this one. You're going to leave the Wokingham. Stuart Riley, it's got your name all over this race.
I've been looking at this. It's a bit of a head scratcher. I'm going to take the favourite on. Undrafted catches the eye simply because he's a former Diamond Jubilee winner. So over the course and distance in the Group One, that's seriously impressive form. The worry would be that he's in here, not that race, and obviously is on the downgrade. There's another sort of former Group One performer who is in off a favourable mark in Dan Zeno, and he's the one I'm going to side with. Grounds in his favour. He's on a mark of 102. He won a big handicap here last year off 104. That was over 5 furlongs. This is over 6, but he's sort of flitted between the two throughout his career. I think he'll run a big race. He's 25-1 with Paddy Power, and for an each way option in a race like this, he's a classy animal.
Okay, and just in case the favourite wins and we've got all bases covered, Tony, can we say you're tipping Dreamfield?
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. So if Dreamfield wins, we are sorted. The last race of Royal Ascot, as ever, is the Queen Alexandra Stakes. This season looks a bit like the charity race that ends the Punchestown Festival, with I don't know, slightly more or slightly less strength in depth. Paul Binfield, give us the betting on the Queen Alexandra. Well, I'd love it.
We do love this race. 11-8 Thomas Hobson, 6 Count Octave, 8 Palisator and Renetti, and it's 9-1 the rest, Lee.
Who wants to have first crack at it? Tony O'Hare.
Yeah, well, it's the Royal Ascot bumper, so therefore you have to take Willie Mullins very seriously. He's won it a couple of times before. Thomas Hobson was second in the race last year, having won the Ascot Stakes early in the week. We haven't seen him since he was 6th in the Melbourne Cup, but he's fit and fancied. I think he's definitely the pick of ours. Palisator sweetened up over Hurls last season. Interesting runner for Gordon Elliott. Renetti is talented, but kinky. Mary Devey was out with the watching in the Ascot Stakes. And Light Pillar for Joseph O'Brien. He used to be trained by Andre Fab. Was second at La Stole over a mile and 7. But I think Thomas Hobson is definitely the pick.
Okay. Stuart, Palisator, back on British soil.
Yes, Palisator is back on British soil, Lee.
With that, really, I was hoping you would expand more and give us your thoughts on whose former trainer, Sir Mark Prescott, is in the Royal Procession today, which is lovely, isn't it?
That's spectacular. Good for Mark.
Again, you could have expanded more on that one. Who do you think will win the Queen Alexandra, Stuart Riley?
There we go. Not Palisator, I think, if you hadn't guessed. I was somewhat tempted by the Mullins horse, Mary DeVee. Obviously, Willie, this race has become something of a benefit for him. Christophe Soumillon would be a rather eye-catching jockey booking. And yeah, he was out with the washing in the Ascot Stakes, but he sat off a fairly sedate pace, so I'd be for forgiving him that. The other one that catches my eye is Nearly Caught, one of the Huey Morrison contingent. Huey Morrison is another gentleman who does rather well in this race. He's one of those horses. He has been banging his head against the brick wall. So he's just been coming up against some very good horses in those sort of staying races, and I think this may be an opportunity that is a bit more in line with his class. Like, he's a very good horse. He's not quite up to taking on those top Group One horses in over those staying trips. So I'm going to, you know, play the two of them each way and hope to get lucky.
Okay, two tips then from Stu in the Queen Alexandra Stakes. Paul Binfield, our final tip of Royal Ascot goes to you, and it is.
I'm going to go for Glencadam Glory, Lee. We're 4 places each way in this race. My selection was a little bit disappointing in the Henry II Stakes, but he ran okay in a listed race here last month, and the drop in class could go well at a nice price.
Okay, smashing, we've had all the tips. Just time now then for the best bets from the troops on day 5. I'll say Harry Angel. Stuart, you will say
Harry Angel.
2 for Harry Angel. Tony O'Hare.
Thomas Hobson in the last.
Thomas Hobson for Tony O'Hare. And Paul Binfield.
Van Beethoven in the Windsor Castle.
Van Beethoven for Binners in the Windsor Castle. That then wraps up our Racing Post Royal Ascot postcast. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And God save the Queen. Goodbye.
Paddy's pulling out all the stops for Royal Ascot. That's right, it's money back as a free bet on all losers if the starting prize favourite wins on one race each day of the festival. Check out the app for today's race. Max free bet £10. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. Begambleaware.org.